You're listening to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for April 2001. This is issue number 193, and I'm your host, Fred Vobey, the publisher of the DX Audio Service. My address is 706 McKenzie Drive, Lima, Ohio, 45805, and you can contact me via telephone at 419-228-4199, the best time being between 6 and 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And if you'd like to become a member of the DX Audio Service and live in the United States of America, the cost is $25 to members in Canada. The subscription rate is $28. To Mexico and the Caribbean, it's $32. And to Europe and elsewhere, it's $38. And those prices are also the renewal rates. And tapes are sent via first-class mail, and you keep the cassettes. If you'd like to subscribe, make your check payable to the National Radio Club Incorporated. And then just send them to me at the address that I just mentioned. Well, we're starting off this edition with an apology, and that is that I don't have After Dark number 11 done. Last couple of weeks have been kind of rough for me here in the studio. I've had kind of bronchitis cold, a nasty virus which is going around this area that hits you in the respiratory system and just knocks you flat for a couple days. So I have not had hardly any time to work on After Dark since the last time we spoke on this tape. So what I'm going to do, rather than just kind of say, hey, why don't you go ahead and send in your money and go for it, let's wait about a month, and I'll announce next month what is on After Dark number 11, give you all the details, and then you can decide whether or not you want to buy it. And, of course, go through the Publication Center when you purchase After Dark. The Publication Center is up in Mansville, New York. It's National Radio Club Publications, Post Office Box 164, Mansville, New York, 13661. And that's in the United States of America. And before I lose my voice again, let's get into Jerry Starr with a look at the AM Switch. Jerry?
Hi, everybody. Jerry Starr with another edition of AM Switch right out of the pages of the National Radio Club's DX News Magazine. Two editions of the Switch this month. We start with reference number 505 and the following call letter changes. On 730, CKLG Vancouver, British Columbia becomes CJNW. 930 WYNI Monroeville, Alabama changes to WVMA. On 970, WWIT Canton, North Carolina changes to WBCG. 990 KIKI Honolulu, Hawaii becomes KHBZ. On 1080, WFIV Kissimmee, Florida changes to WHOO. 1160, WXRT Chicago, Illinois becomes WYLL. 1190 KJOI Dallas, Texas changing to KTRA. 1300 WILP West Hazleton, Pennsylvania becomes WOGY. On 1320 KNRQ Eugene, Oregon changing to KSCR. 1370 WMJT Moundsville, West Virginia becomes WVLY. 1380 KHJJ Lancaster, California changes to KWJL. 1490 KSAM Huntsville, Texas becomes KHVL. On 1510 KIKA Ontario, California changes to KMXM. 1510 WAVB in Lajas, Puerto Rico becomes WTCV. Also on 1510, WNRB Boston, Massachusetts changes to WSZE, but don't bother writing that in your log because in the next edition that will change again. And on 1600, KBLO in Blaine, Washington becomes KVRI. Two applications of interest for new stations, 740 in Ponce, Puerto Rico, 500 watts daytime, 100 watts nighttime with a non-directional antenna. That will be a synchronous transmitter for the 740 station in Puerto Rico. And on 1200, a new station applied for in Kingston, New York, where there used to be a station for a short period of time, 2,000 watts daytime, 400 watts night with a U4 antenna. One application from an existing facility of interest on 1340 CJAN, Asbestos Quebec will move to 99.3 FM. Now, I know you heard that last month, but last month we misspoke and said 1240. That actually should be 1340. Two grants of interest. Both are Canadians moving to the FM band on 580 CKAP. Kappus Casing, Ontario moves to 100.9. And 1170 CKGY in Red Deer, Alberta moves to 95.5. And under otherness on 1080 WALD in Walterboro, South Carolina, this station is presently silent. They've applied for a new call letter. Perhaps the new call will return when the station does. 1100 KZPM Bakersfield, California is also silent. Their plans are to return to the air in June. 1170 KBNZ in Honolulu, Hawaii. This silent station has returned to the air. On 1290 WCFI, Ocala, Florida, another silent station that is now back on the air. 1310 KMYX in Taft, California has gone silent. 1320 KSDT in Hemet, California is back on the air. 1340 WAGR Lumberton, North Carolina has returned to the air. 1340 WCVI in Connellsville, Pennsylvania. This station is silent for what they call technical upgrades. No news on when that is planning to return to the air. 1390 WEPG Presque Isle, Maine is back on the air. 1520 WTRI Brunswick, Maryland has also returned to the air. 1570 KUAU in Haiku, Hawaii has gone silent once again. And on 1660 WGID, the new expanded band station in Canabanas, Puerto Rico, has been testing on the air. Moving to edition number 506, these call letter changes. 850 KACD Thousand Oaks, California becomes KSSC. 910 KVVQ Hesperia, California changing to KRAK. On 1020 WRBF, Kendall, Florida becomes WRHB. This is a brand new station that is not yet on the air. We were in Kendall about 2 weeks ago and heard nothing on 1020. 1050 KHTL in Los Ranchos de Albuquerque, New Mexico becomes KTBL. On 1060 WAMT, Titusville, Florida becomes WIXC. 1070 WGLY Plattsburgh, New York changing to WLFE. 1140 WTEL in Red Springs, North Carolina. That's right, this call is moving again. Red Springs becomes WYRU once again. On 1290 WYBN in Saline, Michigan becomes WCAS. 1470 KRAK Sacramento, California changes to KIID. 1480 WKEA in Bridgeport, Alabama becomes WYMR. 1510, we told you there'd be another change here. WSZE in Boston, Massachusetts now becomes WWZN. And on 1630 WYRU Augusta, Georgia becomes, you guessed it, WTEL. Several applications of interest on 1450 KTSP in St. George, Utah has applied to increase their day power to 10 kilowatts. No change of frequency is indicated in this application, even though this power level is not presently authorized on Class 4 frequencies, so we'll have to keep an eye on that. 1470 WFJY, the silent station in Portage, Pennsylvania, has requested 200 watts in the daytime, 88 watts at night, and a non-directional antenna, which may be some sort of stopgap measure to get this station back on the air. The one-year limit for being silent for them is fast approaching. And on 1490, KWOK in Hoquiam, Washington, would like to move their city of license to Cosmopolis, Washington. Some grants of interest, and once again, these are all Canadian stations moving to the FM band. On 600, CKCL in Truro, Nova Scotia, will be moving to 99.5. 750 CKGB Timmins, Ontario moving to 99.3. 920 CJCJ Woodstock, New Brunswick to 104.1. And on 1240 CJNH in Bancroft, Ontario moving to 97.7. Some otherness items on 600 KNRO Redding, California is silent. 1130 WMGA in Moultrie, Georgia, following up on our story last month, according to the paper trail at the FCC, the construction permit for this station to move to 580 kilohertz in Riverside, Georgia, was never used, and the station has remained on 1130 all this time, despite all the major databases, including the NRC Log, M Street Journal, and others, have all shown this station had moved to 580, when in fact it never did. 1550 WAUX Lake Geneva, Wisconsin has gone silent. And on 1590 WKHZ in Ocean City, Maryland, this silent station has returned to the air. And that will wrap it up for AM Switch for this edition. 30 days from now, you and I will all gather around the same cassette machine and have more stuff from the broadcast band. Right now, let's hit the road. Here's John Bowker.
Well, thanks once again, Jerry. Hello, everyone. This is the travelogue portion of the audio service, and today we're going to be hearing from stations operating at 620 on the dial. Now, this is a fascinating frequency because it's one of the two, or wavelengths, as the old Federal Radio Commission used to call them, that were originally assigned for broadcasting, and they called it the 485-meter band. And if you calculate that out, all right, it comes to 618 kilohertz and change, but 620 is close enough. In fact, in those days in the early 1920s, very few radio stations could afford the precise equipment to keep them exactly on 485 meters, and some were actually at 620 on the dial, some of the time. And nearly half of the radio stations in the country were operating on that one frequency all the time. You talk about mayhem and chaos. Also, and I could use some help on this one, you know, my wife and I have driven to within 35 miles of every AM radio station in the lower 48 states. It took us 10 years, but, you know, hey, somebody's got to do something. Wait a minute now. We did not get within 35 miles of John Day, Oregon. That's the only city in the country we missed. But we found two radio stations with directional arrays where a major highway runs between the two towers of their directional array. And both stations operate at 620 on the dial today. We're going to hear one of them today and one of them next month. We'll mention them as we go along. But anyway, if you know of any stations where you drive between the towers on a major highway, like an interstate or a U.S. highway, something like that, why don't you call in on the Musings line? I think it might be fun to have a collection of where these stations exist. Then we'll see if we can find an engineer that'll tell us how they keep it working when a big truck drives between the towers, you know. However, if we don't get started, we're going to be here all year. So let's go to state number one as we begin the April 2001 DX Audio Service Travelogue.
Oh, I got a live one here.
Rock and Blues, 62 WZON Bangor. No commercials. Ever.
That was true until they went broke. And, of course, now they're all sports up there in Bangor. So, I don't know. No report on how they're doing financially these days. But it's time to move to the west a few hundred miles along U.S. Route 2 from Bangor into the Green Mountain State, and that's where I was born. And we're going to hear from the station where I was first heard on the air. That was in the summer of 1946, and it was a very brief stint, just filling in for a guy. But no recordings, unfortunately, exist of me of that era, at least on this station. And it's just as well, frankly. But here's a cut of announcer Bill Dow.
CBS in Vermont, this is WCAX in Burlington.
And of course, as with all good things, a bottom liner came to town, and in 1962, or as they would point out to you, in 62, you get it, 620, anyway, this guy changed everything. Admittedly, the new call sign reflects the station's Vermont heritage very well.
This is Vermont, WBMT, Burlington.
And one more from them. Oh, yes, indeed. That's very nice country there in a very sophisticated city, let me assure you. But while we're at that northern latitude, let's move across Lake Champlain, across the Adirondacks, and set out to see the rest of the world along the middle of New York State.
The Entertainer, 62 WHEN, Syracuse.
News Watch 62, the 6 p.m. edition. I'm Jules Coleman. It's 83 degrees.
That's how they sounded in 1977. And now?
No wimpy Kenny G stuff here. Only manly stuff. Sports. The sports monster. Sports Radio 620 WHEN, Syracuse.
Warren Chafe.
Okay, Carolyn. Now, here's a station I simply can't keep up with, so we'll have to settle for a little history as we come down the Hudson River to the metropolitan area and tune in to 620 from our vantage point here sitting in the Statue of Liberty Park. First one in 1959.
This is the grown-up sound of today. You're turned on when you're tuned in to WVNJ, 62 AM in New York.
Sometimes sweet, sometimes swinging, WVNJ.
And then in 1993, they changed to this.
WSKQ, Newark, New York. Esta es la superpotencia hispana. El área metropolitana de New York, New Jersey, Long Island y Connecticut. Siempre al servicio de nuestra comunidad.
Okay, continue with us now into 1995.
De discriminar a nuestros policías hispanos no va.
WSLX Newark, New York.
De la mañana, aquí están los titulares. Congresista Roberto Menéndez.
And finally, for this part of the world,
keep it right here. Coming up on most of these one-on-one stations, more around the NFL. It's not a radio station. It's a support group. One-on-one Sports New York, AM 620, WJWR Newark.
Jacksonville out in front. I'm Andy Mazur, and here's what's happening. The Jaguars got down earlier to the Oilers in rainy Memphis.
And it goes on and on. So be it. We head next west on Interstate 80 to the western part of Pennsylvania for a couple of cuts on their 620 entry in the world of broadcasting. We'll go back to 1974 for this very first cut.
More of the latest information on health, medicine, wellness, and nutrition with Dr. Martin Gallagher right here on WHJB, Greensburg, Pennsylvania.
Mutual News. The chances for lower interest rates apparently got better this morning.
Now, just about the time we were passing through that part of the country on our way to the Bridgeport, West Virginia, NRC and DX Audio Service Convention 3 years ago, that station changed its call letters, and we were delighted to be on hand when that happened. And on the way home through the Carolinas, we added even more stations to the 620 log, and this first one runs a full 5,000 watts during the daylight hours from the Golden Triangle.
From Mel Torme as well. And that's all coming up next. And, of course, around 8 o'clock, we'll be joining TalkNet for the best in conversation radio right here on AM 620, WDNC, Durham, Raleigh, Chapel Hill. Our time now, 6 o'clock, time for CBS News.
And this second Carolina station is down near the state capital in South Carolina. It's running only 1,000 watts daytimes, and they run 126 watts at night.
This is WTGH, AM 620, Casey, Columbia, South Carolina, the Gospel Highway.
Richland District 1 is taking registration for community education classes.
They got a little hum in their signal, but that's okay, I guess. And it seemed to us the closer that we got to home that week, the more we could hear it, 620 on the dial. This next station also runs 1,000 watts daytimes, and about an eighth of that much at night.
This is Ludlow Porch. You stay right here for more fun conversation on the Ludlow Porch Show, following the top of the hour news only
on AM 620 WTRP in LaGrange, Georgia.
Now, that recording was made in Warm Springs, Georgia, from the parking lot of the house where President Franklin Roosevelt died. But that's only a couple of hours from the Florida border, so let's spend a few minutes trying to figure out what happened along the Sun Coast a couple of years ago now. First, we'll have to go back to the early 1990s for this very first recording at 620.
CBS News is next, followed by Bay Area and State News with Sharon Taylor.
Sunny skies today, high in the mid-60s, clear and cool tonight, low mid to upper 40s. Continue sunny and a bit warmer tomorrow, with high around 70. Now 50 degrees, Tampa, 49, St. Petersburg and Clearwater. It's 9 o'clock.
All news, all morning. 620 WSUN, St. Petersburg, Tampa, Clearwater. A commitment to news.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney.
And then in the late 1990s, the Time Warner cable system in the Tampa Bay area added a new channel, an all-news television channel. It's called Bay News 9, and it continues, of course, to this very day. But partway along its life, the 620 AM station in St. Petersburg decided to save a few bucks and began simulcasting that TV news channel. Regardless of what the announcer says, I can assure you this next cut was made off the AM radio in my own studio.
You're watching Bay News 9, also heard on AM 620 WSAA St. Petersburg.
I'm Jane Acree.
And I'm Jack McCarthy. Thanks for joining us.
And then came that big and confusing frequency switch here. There were three of them. The programs at 570 moved to 1250. The programs at 620 moved to 570. And the sports animal at 1250 moved on to the 620 airwaves. You know, in fact, what this all meant was that the original call letters of the station at 620 were returned. And this is the way it all sounded the instant the change on 620 was made.
This is your new source for sports in Tampa Bay. 620 WDAE St. Petersburg.
The greatest miracle in the world.
This is 620 WDAE, the sports animal.
Yeah.
It's the home of Dan Cilio, Chris Thomas, Jim Rome, Steve Dumick, and the Tampa Bay Lightning. 620 WDAE.
And that's where we stand today on the Sun Coast. But it's time to move back north now that the weather is beginning to get a little more reasonable in the more northern latitudes. 5 hours on the interstate north of where I'm sitting is the Alabama state line. And that state, too, has a station at 620 kilohertz.
Join Ken and Dinah weekday mornings for the Morning Magazine on I-620 WKNI, Lexington, Loretto, Leoma.
USA Radio Network News, this is Kim Taylor.
Okay, Kim, and our final stop this month takes us to state number 18 on the audio service list and, in fact, to its state capital. Notice on this next station, though, the FM and then the AM call signs.
956-9696, the statewide Toyota truck liquidation at Hallmark Toyota BMW, I-55 North Jackson.
WJDX FM, WJDS Jackson's Mix 96.
Jackson weather.
Winter storm watch in effect today for central Mississippi. Rain may be mixed with sleet and changing to light snow this afternoon, and it's 36.
Now, another half-hour mix of your favorite songs. The best mix of yesterday and today on Mix 96.
You know, you don't think of those cold temperatures occurring in Mississippi, do you? Particularly down in the south middle part of the state around Jackson. Oh, it sounded awful. And anyway, then in 1996, we stopped in Jackson once again and heard their new call sign.
All sports, all day, on the Score. Sports Radio 620 WJDX Jackson.
Yeah, that's right. One of the very few examples of a call sign migrating from the FM to the AM side of the house. And, oh, say, one thing I didn't tell you. WDAE is one of the two directional U.S. broadcasting stations where, on a major highway, you drive between the towers. And we'll tell you about the next one next month. I hope I remembered in time. But that's all the time we have for this month. Right now, we're going to head north into the beautiful springtime of New England. And here's Bruce Conte in the DX Digest.
Hello, DXers. I'm Bruce Conte, and this is the DX Digest. This month, the tale of three frequencies, 620, 1080, and 1140 kilohertz, starting with John Bowker's favorite frequency, 620. Here in southern New Hampshire, you never know what you might find. That's WVMT Burlington, Vermont, with a hit from Radio Nacional España stations on 621 kilohertz in Spain and the Canary Islands. WHEN Syracuse, New York.
And next time the market takes you for a roller coaster ride, sit tight. Call A.G. Edwards and Sons in Bangor at 947-5456. Trusted advice, exceptional service, member SIPC. Main Blackwood Hawk and the Sports Zone, WCON.
Blackbears tonight, 4-2. The final. Let's check a couple highlights of this one before.
The Sports Zone, WZON, Bangor, Maine.
You've been listening to University of Maine Hockey in the Sports Zone, WZON. Blackbear Hockey is brought to you in part by UNICEF.
And finally at 620 WJWR Newark, New Jersey, with one-on-one sports, often IDing as WJWR New York. That's a listen to 620 in southern New Hampshire. Next up, 1080 kilohertz, where KRLD Dallas and WTIC Hartford coordinated silent periods with the National Radio Club.
Listen to WTIC Hartford 1080 from Utah, Minnesota, and Oxygen against Detroit.
The pregame show starts
tonight at
7 o'clock.
Here's what WTIC sounded like signing off at 1:34 a.m. Eastern Time, March 18th, with heavy interference from Radio Cadena Habana, Cuba, and WVCG Coral Gables, Florida.
In addition, we're also conducting a radio experiment with our sister and Tina broadcasting station, KRLD, in Dallas, Texas, which is also going off the air in cooperation with the National Radio Club to allow radio enthusiasts across the country an opportunity to receive rare signals on 1080. If you care to stay tuned over the next 60 minutes, you might be able to hear a distant station on 1080 if you have a powerful enough radio. Rest assured, WTIC News Talk 1080 will be returning to the air in less than 1 hour.
In the meantime, we're interested to hear what you hear. If you can't do your
Thank you.
RTIC. Now off the air, you're hearing music from Radio Cadena Habana, Cuba, and religion in Spanish from WVCG, Coral Gables, Florida. That was the name of the program on Radio Cadena Habana, Amigos de la Madrugada. Now at 2 o'clock Eastern, the top of the hour ID in Spanish and English from WVCG. WVCG over Cuba. Shortly after that, KRLD faded up with traffic, local weather, and Bruce Williams.
From Wheels on Wheels, I'm Aaron Ferguson here on the traffic leader, KRLD.
Tuesday Nation brings DNA meals from Wheels to thousands of Dallas County students who would otherwise go hungry. Please give Colorado to DLA 214-689-0000, 214-689-0000.
In KRLD local weather, chance of rain overnight with a low of 42. Right now it's 49 in DFW. I'm Bob Elmore, KRLD local news.
WTIC returned to the airwaves at 2:29 a.m. Both WTIC and KRLD were working on their antennas during the silent periods. The antenna work was originally scheduled for March 4th, but KRLD was awaiting return of a common point RF meter that was set out for calibration, so the work was delayed until March 18th. Chief engineers at both stations asked for DX reports to evaluate what was heard during the silent periods. Another frequency making headlines in the DX community is 1140 kilohertz. There were actually a couple of different events taking place. DXers in the West reported digital noise in what seemed to be an off-frequency Nevada station. After discussions with engineers and the FCC, some have concluded that it was a government or military test from Area S4 near the famous Area 51 in the Kingdom of Nye region of Nevada. A full report by Harry Helms of California and sample audio is available at the NRC DXAS website, www.nrcdxas.org, on the internet. In addition to the interference out west, Cuba had a jammer running on 1140 to block reception of WQBA Miami. This is what it sounds like interfering with WRVA Richmond.
And then to find out that's one of the reasons my daughter took so long to help is because she thought, you know, we always joke, I'd kill him, it's going to hurt my kids. Everybody says that. She thought that if he was killing her grandpa, and the grandpa always would say to him, if anybody ever hurts me or takes me away, grandma will just die because no one takes care of her but me.
This guy had it down, didn't he?
WRVA Richmond with jammer interference from Cuba.
This is WRVA Richmond, your news, weather, and traffic station. And now, in-depth, continuing team coverage on the stories that affect your life. Ladies, we do.
And that's not the only noise from Cuba these days. There's another Cuban jammer on 820 kilohertz. Here's what it sounds like interfering with NPR station WNYC New York.
We're going to be coming back to the issue of how much oil is there, how much we need later in the program. You're listening to The Connection from WBUR Boston and National Public Radio, 1-800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. I'm John McChesney.
The buzz is from Cuba interfering with WNYC. And that's a tale of three frequencies, from John Bowker's favorite to coordinated silent periods reminiscent of the old days of radio and funny noises emanating from Castro's Cuba. Plenty of action across the dial. Before I leave you for another month, here's one more note of interest from WWV and WWVH.
At the time, 2 hours, 16 minutes, coordinated universal time.
at the door. 2 hours, 16 minutes, coordinated universal time.
Attention, this is a NIST special announcement. The National Institute of Standards and Technology will soon be conducting a survey of the WWB and WWBH listeners. NIST is seeking information on how listeners use the broadcast services offered on the WWB broadcast. If you'd like to be added to a mailing list to receive this survey, please send your name and postal address to the NIST radio station, WWB 2000 East County Road 58, Fort Collins, Colorado 80524, or email the information to nist.radio@boulder.nist.gov. The survey will be distributed in May of 2001. Thank you.
At the tone, 2 hours, 17 minutes, coordinated universal time.
At the tone, 2 hours, 17 minutes, coordinated universal time.
The woman's voice announcing the time is on WWVH Hawaii. The man's voice with the time announcement is on WWV Colorado at 15 megahertz, where both stations are often heard together. More next time on the DX Digest. I'm Bruce Conti, 73, and good DX.
247 Radio, one's on the scene.
Mark Dernberger here with another guest on our Bandscan column. This time, we're privileged to visit with Tom Bryant, retired production manager of WSM Nashville. We caught up with Tom at the Opryland Hotel in Nashville on a summer afternoon and asked him about his career.
I was production manager from 1970 to 1998. So I was there for 30 years. I retired on March 1st, 1998.
And you came from our part of the country, in fact, or at least your previous
My first job in radio was KFYR in Bismarck, and I think every DXer in the world knows about that.
550.
Yeah, biggest coverage area of any station on the North American continent in daytime hours.
Now, you know who also claims that, of course, is WNAX in Yankton.
I would argue with that, because I've been through the vast majority of both of those coverage areas, and NAX has a weak spot to the southeast that KFYR doesn't have in the daytime.
Ladies and gentlemen of our listening audience, this is a man who has worked at WSM in Nashville for 30 years and seems to know my territory seven states away like the back of his hand. And there's a reason for that. You have a hobby like the rest of us.
I'm a DXer.
And not only a DXer, but you were named DXer of the Year, was it 2 years ago?
2 years ago, yes. Yeah, and I never really figured out how that happened. I think probably Ernie Weselowski, that scoundrel from Omaha, got into the nominating process somehow and slipped my name in, and they didn't have anybody else make any nominations, so I probably won by default. I don't know what the process was.
You're too humble.
No, I don't know.
You did it by your accomplishments.
Anyway, the reason I know the Upper Midwest so well is because I worked in Bismarck, and then I was in Fargo for a while, and I was in Winnipeg for 4 years. Anyway, it's kind of a fluke the way I wound up in the South, because I was at what at the time was KXGO in Fargo. That's 790. It was
the mighty 790.
It was KFGO for years. John Bowler bought it, changed it to KX to match his TV station there, and after he sold it, it again reverted to KFGO. Well, I was there for that short period of time when it was KXGO, and I replaced a guy that had gone to the National Guard. And the deal was, if when he came back, if there was an opening, I would get it. If there wasn't one, I was out of a job. The guy returned from the National Guard in 6 months, active duty, no opening, so I was without a job. So I answered an ad in broadcasting for WWGM in Nashville, Tennessee. Had never heard of it. It was an easy listening station in the AM band. They were looking for a program director. So I applied for the job, got a call. They had already filled the position, but they wanted an assistant program director, whatever the heck that was. So I came down to Nashville with no intent of staying here at all. It was a 10-kilowatt daytimer. There were about five people on the staff, and my boss was Lyle Dean. So we hit it off just great. Well, the reason I'm telling this whole story is because it gets funny. After I'd been there about 3 weeks, my hometown newspaper showed up. My dad ran the Napoleon Homestead in Napoleon, North Dakota. Nobody knows this story. I've never told this before. So anyway, in his personal column, my dad has written that I'm down in Nashville, Tennessee, temporarily, da-da-da-da-da, going to be coming back to Fargo. because before I left, I'd lined up the program director job for the new WDAY-FM, which wasn't going to be ready to take off for about another 4 to 6 months. Napoleon Homestead arrives in Nashville at WWGM. It's laying out on the front desk. Lyle Dean happens to look at it and see this column that I'm going to be here temporarily, and brings it in and waves it in front of my nose and says, "What's this temporary crap?" I said, "Well, I'm normally not a dishonest person, but I had to do a little finagling around here. I did, came down here not intending to stay." He said, "Well, I would like for you to stay." He said, "I like you. I think you do a good job. Please reconsider, and I'm going to give you 1 week to think it over and take some action." 3 years later, WWGM was struggling terribly. They had changed ownership, changed managers. So I knew that it was going to go under, and I had to get out of there. So I went over to WSM, put in an application. I had some connections there by then, and it took about 3 or 4 months, and finally they said, "Okay, we're going to create a position for you. We want you to come in." So anyway, I started out as a staff announcer, did some newscasts, swing shifts, vacation relief, and one of the very first things that happened, Dave Overton, who was the morning man, head of the morning show, and he was also the program director, said, "Now, there are going to be a lot of times that you're not going to be busy, but we don't want you walking around the hall looking like you're bored or unoccupied." He said, "Always carry around a piece of paper or a clipboard or something and look busy." That was one of the WSM rules. You had to look busy. And about that time, they decided they wanted to open up the production arena. There had been no production of any kind prior to then. The engineers might do a needle drop on occasion, but that was it. Up until this time, announcers had not been allowed to operate any of the technical apparatus at the station. You have to remember the WSM was founded by engineering people. It had insurance company money behind it, but the tech people always ruled the roost until John DeWitt retired in 1968. So unlike most operations that were sales managed, this one was engineering managed. They didn't want any non-engineering people touching their equipment, because they didn't think, first of all, that we were qualified to do it, and second, because they had a big, big staff, and they didn't want to have their numbers decreased.
And they didn't want to be walking around looking like they had nothing to do.
That's right. Well, after DeWitt retired, that sort of all changed. Irving Waugh became the president of the company, and he knew that the radio station didn't sound as spiffy as some of the other operations in town or anywhere else, and he said, "We have to do something about this." So that's when I was approached, and I found out at that time that's the reason they'd hired me, because they knew I had good production skills, and they were looking ahead to the time when they could do this.
Now, when you, for our radio listeners or our DXAS listeners, when you say production, what are you talking about?
Production is when you get a piece of copy typed on a piece of paper,
okay,
and you look it over and you decide, does it need one voice, does it need two, should it have sound effects, what kind of music,
creating commercials.
Yeah, creating commercials. Okay. Very seldom do you get specific instructions that say, "Okay, here's how we want this put together." Normally it's handed to you and you have to make it beautiful. And so that's what I did for the better part of 25 years.
Wow, that's the best part, and that's the best job in radio.
It really is, because it's always a challenge. You never get tired of it. I mean, there's a lot of repetitive stuff, but every once in a while, something comes along that just blows your whistle, and you dig into it,
sure,
and you create a masterpiece, and it's like some kind of an enormous high, and it rejuvenates you, and then you can handle all the mediocre stuff again for another week or so till another good one comes along.
Well, it must have worked for you, Tom, because you act, your energy level is that of about a 35-year-old, so you must have had a good time in your career.
Yeah, I always say that I'm 59 going on 20. I did have a good time in my career. I loved the work I did. The 4 years I spent in Winnipeg at CJOB was probably the most exciting of my life. That may sound strange, having worked at WSM, but I think because I was younger and I was a really big fish in a pretty big pond in Winnipeg, that was a big deal to me. When you said you worked for CJOB, everybody bowed and scraped, and it was almost
good,
like,
for the ego.
It was almost like royalty, yeah.
Yep.
And anybody that's in this business has an ego. Don't ever,
that's right. That's
don't
right.
ever let them tell you otherwise.
You mentioned being a big fish in a big pond. WSM is hardly a minnow. WSM is one of the largest
Yes, but I wasn't a primary air personality at WSM, never was. And I think that's the ego thing getting in.
Okay, sure.
The production department is where my niche was at WSM. And I really fell into it and liked it, and they liked what I did and treated me very well for the 30 years that I was here. 27 as production manager.
You were also associated with the franchise. The Grand Ole Opry.
Yeah, it's kind of difficult to put the two together because the radio station is in a different building, and when you work for the radio station, although the Grand Ole Opry is part of it, you're so divorced from it that unless somebody says, "Hey, the Opry's part of us," you don't think about it.
So it's like a remote broadcast.
Sure, it is. Yeah. It's over in a big auditorium, half a mile from the station, right. And when I started, it was 15 miles away. Yes, it's part of the heritage. It's the biggest part of the heritage. It's the most important part of the heritage.
What I found interesting, Tom, was when we walked into the WSM control room here, you met a new announcer who has been here 6 months, who knew of you. You had never met, but he said, "I recognized your voice from the intro to the Grand Ole Opry."
Well, when I retired...
That could be taken for ego stroking.
It is, and when I retired, they asked me if I would continue to do those openings. Every Saturday night, there's about a 30-second opening for the Grand Ole Opry, and I had recorded those things for years, do 8 at a time, and it has... The only reason they have to be updated is because you say, "And now here's the 4,973rd consecutive presentation of the world-famous Grand Ole Opry." So I'd recorded those for years, and they asked me to continue doing them.
Well, let's talk about WSM then for a few minutes.
Okay.
WSM was, along with about 12 other major operators, including my alma mater, WCCO, quite threatened by the FCC's plans to break up the clear channels and add other stations to the frequency and cause interference to that signal that once went forever. And as I recall, what was his name? Len
Hensel.
Hensel spearheaded a public relations campaign to try to get congressional reaction on this thing, and he called it something like the Save the Grand Ole Opry Committee.
That's exactly what it was called. And it was not a multimedia thing either. It was done during the week, at night, during Skywave operating hours, and I think they ran some during the daytime too to get people in the daytime coverage area, but it was a very heavy saturation of on-air spots only. No print, no TV. I don't remember what the total number of letters they got was or how many were received by the people in Congress and the FCC, but it was phenomenal. I think everybody was shocked by the amount of response that they got to the thing, because for a long time they hadn't really gauged how much activity they could get by doing something like that on a Skywave signal. It was kind of thought by that time that the things had fizzled out, that FM had eroded the listening audience so much, and cassettes and CB radios, that maybe it wasn't going to be very effective. They kind of went out on a limb when they did this.
What they wanted to do was prove to the Congress and ultimately the FCC
that there were people out there that really cared about this.
There was some terrific backlash in the Congress as well. And in fact, after the FCC came out with a proceeding, I think around 1961, in which they proposed to start breaking up the clears and adding other stations, they also proposed that some stations, that the commission put about a one-year hiatus on any further rulemaking and invited stations to apply for what was called superpower.
Right.
Far in excess of the 50,000 watts that they operate at.
The only thing that I thought about the superpowers personally was that it was a good idea because, as we know now, you get in the car at night and the 50 kilowatt clears, although they're okay, certainly aren't what they were 25, 30 years ago.
And that's because there are more stations on the channel.
Sure, more interference, man-made.
Whereas there used to be just one for the whole country.
Precisely. And more Latin American stuff, too.
Okay.
I think really the worst thing, aside from the actual duplication of channels on the frequency, I don't think that's as big a problem as the side channels. Because we got stuff on 640 and 660 spotted in all over the place. We're no longer listenable in Atlanta at night because of a station on 640 there. And that's happened all over the place. The clear channels have been rendered useless in many, many markets where they really shouldn't be because of sideband splice.
Adjacent channel.
Yeah,
yep.
Exactly.
Now, the commission had agreed that they were going to reserve 12 channels for possible superpower. And they were also going to make sure that there would be no adjacent channel assignments made that might imperil the ability to go to that superpower. The average in the 1962 applications was 450 to 500,000 watts.
WSM asked for 750,000. It was kind of interesting because there was a little room, kind of a cubbyhole downstairs behind the mail room, and there was always a guy sitting in there with drafting instruments and things and this easel, and they were doing stuff.
Drawing maps.
Yeah, it looked kind of like a war room. I mean, it was almost top secret, and they glared at you when you went in there. The initial impression when I first saw that 750,000 watt daytime map is, oh my God, this thing really gets out. I mean, it looked like it went halfway to Denver. And I guess it probably darn near did. And then I got to sitting down and analyzing and comparing the 50,000 watt map to the 750,000 and realized how little difference there really is. The reason being that it takes so much power incrementally to expand the coverage area that 750,000 watts didn't really get it out all that much farther than the 50,000, maybe 150, 200 miles. What it really did do was increase the grade A, the reliable heavy microvolt area was just enormous. So it really did enhance the daytime stuff much more than nighttime, because at nighttime the 750,000 wouldn't have been really a whole lot different than 50,000.
Tom Bryant, thank you so very much.
You're more than welcome. But it was a lot of fun.
Tom Bryant from Nashville. And this is Mark Dernberger, now broadcasting from Grand Junction, Colorado, on the western slope of the Rockies. If you have any suggestions or comments, please forward them to our new email address. That's mark@dernberger.com. Mark with a K at Dernberger, DURENBERGER.com. Next month, we begin a three-part series of Clear Channel captures on the road from Minneapolis to Ohio and back through southern Indiana and Illinois. Until next time we meet, good listening, DXers.
Thanks, Mark. And before we flip over to side two of this tape, let's just run over our DX change list with some items from Kevin Redding. Kevin has the following for sale: an Optimus 12-794 AM-FM stereo pocket radio with clock, timer, digital readout, deep bass boost, 10 memories, stereo via headphones or 1-inch speaker. Very good shape and sounds nice and has manual. Original price was $49.95. He's selling for $18 plus $4.50 shipping and insurance. Needs two AAA batteries to make it work. An Optimus 12-603A high-performance AM-FM radio, similar in appearance to the GE Super Radio 3. It's virtually mint condition, unused. AC-DC operation manual, regular price was $59.95. He's selling it for $28 plus $9 shipping and insurance. A realistic TM-150 AM-FM-FM stereo tuner, probably a good set to convert to AM stereo if you want to. $13 plus $6 shipping and insurance. It's AC only, by the way. And finally, a Westinghouse multiband model PRM-5020A, dark chocolate in color, AM-FM marine band shortwave VHF radio. It covers 540 to 1600 kilohertz, then jumps from 1.9 to 6 megahertz, 6 to 17 megahertz, and then finally 145 to 176 megahertz. AC-DC operation, $20 plus $9 shipping and insurance. Tuning knob is incorrect for this radio, but does work. All radios guaranteed to work and are guaranteed not to be DOA. For more information, contact Kevin via email at amfmtvdx@qwest.net, or call area code 480-632-0679. Will not accept collect calls. And that is our DX change.
Please flip the tape to side two.